It's been 3 months since Russia invaded Ukraine, and there's been a lot of discussion about why Ukraine is so important to Russia. So we've been thinking at Geopolity that we'll do a series on the geopolitics of key nations around the world. Russia seems like a good place to start, as it's been on the news a lot recently. In future podcasts, we look to do some of the other nations, such as the US, France, UK, China, and Germany as well, as well as different regions around the world. So I've got Geopolity founder Adnan Khan here to discuss the geopolitics of Russia today. How are you keeping, Adnan? It's been a very long time since we've had one of our chats.
I'm good, Yusuf. I'm good. It has been a while. A lot's been happening. It's been a while, so it's good to be back.
So I guess the best place to start is, what do we mean when we're saying the geopolitics of a nation? What does that term actually mean?
I think that's a really, really good place to start, actually. There's a number of ways we can make sense of any nation. You can look at the people, you can look at the economic structure, you can look at the values of a particular people. Now, using a geopolitical framework, it allows us to see what is eternal and what is not eternal about a nation. So whilst we may assume things change in any country over time, however, things such as geography, they don't change and they remain the same. And as a result, they actually affect the behavior of people for long periods of time. So the fact that the US is surrounded by the Pacific and the Atlantic, which is very unique, there is no other country, well, apart from North America, there are no other countries that have such a reality. So as a result, America is far away from many of the conflict zones in the world. And this has an impact on American society. It's impacted America's power, and to the point it's even impacted how America gets involved in the world. So although many things change, things like geography, which is the heart of geopolitics, they don't really change. And that allows us to identify those fixed factors that impact a nation. So from this, what we can see is that all societies have imperatives. These are things they need to do in order to survive. And the challenge to survival, it gives rise to constraints, because there's limits to what nations can do in order to survive. So a country like Ukraine, a small country like some of these islands off Latin America and in the Caribbean, they need to survive, but they have a lack of resources. So what you find is, despite all the imperatives, things you need to survive, there are limits on how nations can achieve that. So what geopolitics does is, it's all about identifying the imperatives and the constraints of nations. And this allows us to make sense of those things that are eternal and those things that are not about nations. So geopolitics really is about looking at those fixed factors, irrespective of time and place, which shape a nation. And it's become quite a popular framework, really, to look at countries.
So with that definition in mind, then what would we say is Russia's geopolitical imperatives, and what are their constraints?
Okay, so if there's one word that sums up understanding the geopolitics of Russia, it's indefensibility. Now, Russia has been around for a few hundred years, and in the last 600 years, Russia has been invaded once every century. In the last 200 years, Russia has been invaded on average every 33 years. So, you know, Napoleon, you had Germany in World War I, and then you had the Nazis in World War II. And if you look at Russia, it's an absolutely huge country. It straddles, I think, more than 9 time zones. Some parts of Russia are frozen for most parts of the year. Some parts of Russia are warm. Some parts of Russia are above the Arctic Circle, where there are parts of the year where the sun doesn't really set. And there's also parts of the year where the sun never rises high enough for them to see the day. Russia also has varied climate. So all of this has made it very difficult for Russia to defend all its territories. Now, the reason why Russia is difficult to defend is because the majority of Russia's population, it sits on what's called the Northern European Plain. This is the area that starts in France, it goes through Germany, goes through Poland, and then it opens up and goes right the way into Russia. And this has obviously been the route many of the invaders from Europe have come into Russia. So you find Russia's European border, there's no natural barriers. It sits on plains. So from Moscow all the way down to the Black Sea, where Ukraine is. What you find is, although there's a border on a map, there's no physical border. And this has really come to define Russia and the Russian people. Russia started off as a very small city in Moscow. And what they realized is all around them, they were just surrounded by flat land and they were vulnerable to invasion. So what they did over the centuries was they expanded their territory until they got to the Pacific, until they got to the Caucasus, and they expanded all the way into Europe. So really, when we're looking at the imperatives of Russia, which is how do they survive, the expansion of their borders is them defending themselves. So by creating these large buffer zones between your core territory and your borders, what they're trying to do is defend themselves. And that's why I use the term, to make sense of Russia, it's really a discussion about Russia's indefensibility. So over the centuries, this imperative has defined Russia again and again and again. So Russia has a certain type of government always. Russia has a certain type of military. Russia has a certain type of relationship with the rest of the world due to this indefensibility. So really, for Russia to defend itself, it needs to expand. And all of that costs money. All of that requires a certain type of economy. All of that requires large armed forces. And this has defined Russia. If you understand all of this, you can make sense of Russia's actions.
So when you say they and they're trying to defend themselves, who do you actually mean? Who are the Russian people? What's their origin?
So the Russian people, they originate from Slavic tribes. The Slavic people were groups of pagan tribes that resided and moved to Eastern Europe. That's where they emerged from. So Russia, as we know today, they emerged around Kiev in Ukraine. And that should already tell you why Ukraine is so important to Russia. It originated as what was known as the Kievan Rus, which was a collection of Slavic tribes. And they were in Ukraine around the Dnieper River. And we're talking here about 9th century onwards. And what happened then was around the 1200s, the Mongols were expanding. And what they did was they invaded and destroyed Kiev. So those Slavic tribes that survived, they migrated 300 miles north and they settled on a plain, which they eventually called Muscovy, which we now know as Moscow. So that's where these people emerged from. And eventually they would embrace Christianity. They have their own church. But as Russia or the Russian people expanded their territories, this brought them into contact with Turkic people. This brought them into contact with Finnish people. This brought them into contact with the Tatars, who were a type of Turkic people. And it brought them into contact with Inuit people. So what you find is ethnic Russians, the Slavic tribes, their history is defined by them having to live and cooperate with many people who are ethnically different to them. And this has been a big struggle for the Russian people. They've had to constantly live and try and get on with people who are ethnically different to them. They have a different culture. They've had to rule over them. And Russia is a big territory. So the Russian people, although the stereotype is white, blue-eyed, Christian, you find today you can have Turkic people. You have Tatar people who are a mixture of Turkish people. You have Finnish people. The Russian people today, they have mixed with all sorts of different ethnicities. But the Russian people in origin are a white Slavic people who are more and more becoming a minority in Russia.
Russia has a history of strong autocratic leaders. Is this in any way connected to the geopolitics of Russia?
Yeah, absolutely. Whoever is in power in Russia or Moscow, they have to manage a large territory with varying resources, with extreme climate, and with infrastructure networks. And actually, if you look at Russia's history, really Russia, although it's one country, really it's a group of regional economies, regional nation and identities, which is all lumped together as Russia. So as a result, the job of whoever leads this country is beyond the resources and capability of Moscow. So that's why Russia has always gone down the route of autocracy, of dictatorship, of a secret service to maintain control of all these territories. So if you keep in mind, the original heartland, or even today, the heartland of Russia is from Moscow down to the Caucasus. This area is surrounded by flat land and all sorts of people that could invade it. So their best form of defense for the Russian people was to expand. Now, obviously, if you're going to expand, you're going to have to conquer other people. So as a result, Russia has a strong history of a strong leader, autocratic leaders. You don't get democracy generally in Russian history. You don't get consensus type rule. You don't get a parliament that's effective. What you usually have is a faction or a very strong leader. So if you look, Ivan the Terrible, Peter and Catherine the Great, Stalin and Putin, this is very characteristic of Russia's history. And again, this goes back to their geopolitics, where they are trying to maintain control of a large area, which requires a lot of resources and resources they don't have. But in order to defend themselves, having autocratic strong leaders has been a constant feature of Russia's history.
I feel that even though they've had these very strong leaders, they've always had economic troubles in the past. So there are regularly collapses in the country, for example, in 1917 and then again in 1991. What's the reason for that?
So Russia, it is the largest country in the world. It straddles, I think, over 9 time zones. But 75% of Russia is uninhabitable. Most of Russia is frozen for over 6 months of the year. And in the summer, a lot of this area, it turns into marshland. So you're not going to get much agriculture there. And it's actually very, very difficult to live there. And all of this means it makes domestic internal trade very difficult. But one of the things Napoleon actually said when he invaded Russia in the early 1800s is that conquer a town and then the next town will be 200-300 miles away. That literally in between towns, there was no infrastructure, there was nothing. So one of the reasons why Napoleon forces and all forces who invade Russia struggle is such a huge country. How do you feed your troops? How do you maintain them? You've got hundreds of miles of land in between towns. This makes invasion difficult, but it also means domestic trade and domestic economic development is also difficult. Russia also is struggled with maritime trade. I think 95% of global trade is via the ocean. And I think apart from one port in the Black Sea, most of Russia's ports are frozen for most parts of the year. And the Black Sea port in Crimea, which is a warm water port, meaning that for most of the year, the water is not frozen, it can be blocked by Turkey. So Russia's heartland can only be defended by expanding Russia's borders. But expanding Russia's borders come at immense financial, political, economic, and social costs. So in effect, Russia's imperative to survive is completely out of sync with the abilities, capabilities they have. Russia has to defend, protect such a huge country that just takes up so much resources. So either you take care of your people or you take care of your country. So to give an example, in the last decade of the Soviet Union, so in the 1980s, half of industrial production of the Union was going towards maintaining the military. It wasn't actually going for the benefit of the domestic economy. And that's why Russia has a regular history of the economy collapsing. Russia collapses, a strong ruler comes, he unites the nation, he builds some of the economy, then he or she has to expand Russian territory to defend it. And there comes a point where maintaining Russia's borders is undertaken at the cost of taking care of the people. And in the most recent history, we saw that under the Soviet Union. We saw how near the end of the Soviet Union, when it was made public, Russia's budget, Russia's spending, people were horrified the amount of money that was going towards the military. They were absolutely horrified. And then now they could understand why they're queuing up for toilet roll and bread, because most of the money that was being made in the country was going towards maintaining the military. Now, the military was being used to defend the country. And this is the age-old Russian problem. In order to defend the country, they need to expand their borders. This requires resources. And then eventually, this leads to an uprising and a removal of the government because people have enough of their resources being siphoned off to defend the country rather than their own economic prosperity.
Now, you've painted quite a bleak picture about Russian past and even their future. It seems like quite an impossible situation that they're in. Isn't there anything that they can do differently?
This comes to the heart of geopolitics, Yusuf. The assumption here is Russia has various options. But Russia's geography is not going to change. The fact that Russia is a huge country, the fact that 75% people can't live on, the fact that where most of Russia's population reside, which is in European Russia, is surrounded by indefensible borders. This has been the case in the 9th century with the Kievan Rus. This was the same under Peter and Catherine the Great. It was the same under the communists, and it's the same today. And this is why using geopolitics is a very handy tool to use, because we look at those things that don't change. They could change the type of ruler they've got. They could change the type of economy they have. But we're assuming here that the throw of the geopolitical dice gives you options. Geopolitics is about geography. It's about power. And where the Russian people are, where they reside, you're constrained by geography. You can try and use technology to get over it. And Russia has tried that. But this is where the Russian people emerged. This is where they resided. This is where their homeland is. And as a result, the best they've tried to do is make use of their resources in a way where they can take care of the Russian people and actually protect themselves as well.
So you mentioned the Soviet Union in your last question. Now, what was the impact of communism in Russia? Has that had a lasting impact even to today?
So under the Soviet Union, under communism, Russia expanded to its furthest extent. Russia's borders was from the Pacific. It was all the way on the border with Afghanistan. It went all the way into the Caucasus, into Azerbaijan, Armenia. And its border was 1,000 miles in Europe from Moscow, all the way in Berlin. This was when Russia was at most secure. The Russian people had lots of buffer zones around them. In any invasion, Russia could fall back and prepare its forces. For anyone to invade Russia during the Soviet Union, it was a tall order, because the heartland of Russia was way further than their borders were. On the other hand, what communism also did is it ripped the heart out of Russian society and the Russian people. So communism, it completely abhorred religion. Religion had no part to play in fact, it was the opium of the masses. You've all been fooled. Now, keep in mind, culturally, the Russian people had their own church, the Christian people. And when the Soviet Union came and implemented communism, this was completely ripped out from the nation. Then on top of that, the Soviet Union expanded into Central Asia. And these are different people. It expanded into the Caucasus. It expanded into Eastern Europe. So on one hand, you've got communism, and now you're ruling over people who have completely different beliefs. So you find what the Soviet Union did, it used its secret service. It used the Iron Hand. It used the very brutal tactics by Stalin to really control the people. So I would say in many ways, the Soviet Union made Russia, but it also destroyed Russia at the same time. They destroyed the Russian people. And in fact, today, a lot of the things that were achieved under the Soviet Union, the problems are still with us today. So the fact that Russia's population is declining, the fact that Russia suffers from so many social problems, a lot of this goes back to communism. So on one hand, the Soviet Union took the Russian people into space. They developed lots of technology. They invented intercontinental ballistic missiles. They established or tried to win people to a utopia. Many people around the world sacrificed for achieving the ideals of communism. On the other hand, it completely destroyed the social fabric of the Russian people. And that's why in the 1990s, not surprising, many of the former Soviet republics, they jumped ship as quick as they could. These Eastern European countries became independent. Ukraine became independent. Central Asian republics became independent. So it was in many ways a double-edged sword.
So we've talked about where Russia came from and its people and the geopolitics around it. Does the war in Ukraine today fit into that same context, or is this something different going on?
So yeah, the war in Ukraine, it completely fits into Russia's historical geopolitical challenges. Ukraine is where the Russian people, the Slavic people, originate from. It is on the border with Russia. It is a buffer region to the heartland of Russia. So historically, Russia has always tried to expand and have Ukraine as a buffer zone. So what you're seeing take place in Ukraine currently is really just the modern version of an age-old problem that Russia's had to deal with. So if you look at it, the argument for Ukraine by the Russians has constantly been, if Ukraine joins NATO, if Ukraine is not with Russia, the West have come right up to Russia's border. The north of Ukraine is a couple of hundred miles from Moscow. So this is existential for Russia. This is a geopolitical constraint Russia has. So really what's going on in Ukraine is really part of the long history of Russia. So expanding from the heartland of Russia to have a buffer zone, Ukraine is probably the key buffer zone Russia needs. The fall of Ukraine going western now means the West are right up to Russia's borders. And keep in mind, historically, the major threat, major invasion route has been on the Northern European plain. The German forces, the French forces, the Lithuanian forces, the Polish forces have come through the Northern European plain to come and invade Russia. As far as the Russian people are concerned, they are just seeing the modern version of that today.
So you can never talk about Russia without talking about Vladimir Putin. He has been there since as far as I can remember. And he apparently has single-handedly taken Russia into war in Ukraine. Where does he actually fit in Russia's long history of autocratic leaders?
So that's a great question, actually, because Putin is really just the recent or modern version of a long line of Russian leaders who have expanded Russia's borders in order to defend it. Putin came into power when Russia was in chaos in the 1990s. Russia was completely falling apart. It was going through a Great Depression. And the Soviet Union, the Communist Party, had been thrown out of power in 1991. The KGB had lost its teeth. So the security class, who for long had defended the Soviet Union, they were no longer in power. And what Russia experienced was a complete disaster in the 1990s. So Putin, who represents the security class, they were able to get back into power in 1999. And since then, what they've been doing is re-centralizing the country, taking back Russia's resources, making Russia strong domestically. And then what Putin started doing was expanding into the former Soviet Republic, so Central Asia, Eastern Europe, and the Caucasus. So everything I've just said there is what every Russian leader has been doing since the day Russia was created. So Putin is no different to any other Russian leader. Only thing I'll add here is the way a lot of this is being reported is it's Putin personally. Now, Russia is too large a country for one person to rule over it. Even Stalin, who was very powerful, to rule over Russia, you need a whole class, a whole faction to help you. And what you got in Russia is the security class have a state called Russia. And Putin is from the security class. So although the West keep painting Putin single-handedly, it's not like that. Putin is from a class of people, and that's the security class. And their view is Russia, the Soviet Union, was destroyed by the West. They are now fixing that and making Russia a power again. Whilst Putin may be the leader, as we know, in any country, one person is never the system or the only leader. For any country to operate, for any ruler to be effective, you need a whole faction, a whole class of people around you. And in this case, Putin just represents the security class.
The security class that you mentioned, it seems like Putin must have a great deal of control over them for him to be in power for such a long period of time. People would argue that, is there anyone that could replace Putin? What can you tell us about the security class?
So what unites the security class is they have the same view about their country and the world. Russia's a victim. Russia collapsed. Russia is a power. Russia should be respected. Russia is strong. That's what unites the security class. Now, obviously, someone from amongst them needed to practically rule. And because Putin was close eventually to Boris Yeltsin, who had completely messed up the country, he happened to emerge. So there are actually many, many people that, in fact, Putin had been ruling Russia with about 6 or 7 key advisors, and these are all from the security class. You've got the Secret Service. Putin himself was from the Secret Service originally. You've got the military. And then obviously since then, you've had other classes of people. You've had the business class who have emerged. You've had industrialists. You obviously had the oligarchs as well. So there are actually many people that can replace Putin. And this is where I think West has to be careful here. They all assumed Dmitry Medvedev, he was a bit more Western, a bit more pro-business. And he would open up to the West. And he didn't. And the reason why that is he was a protege of Putin. he looks at the world from Putin's standpoint as well. So even when Putin does decide to call it a day, what's going to happen is this won't be a change in Russia. What you're seeing is a transition. And what a transition is a face changes, but the underlying system remains the same. So obviously the war's going on. You've got a whole propaganda war going on in Ukraine. And the way it's made out is Putin made the decision on his own. But what you find is the Russian people have generally supported him. And you're not seeing a breakdown in the security class. Now, this may change obviously going forward. You've got the economic sanctions and things like that. But Russia is too large of a country for one person to completely dominate it. You need lots of other people to work with you. And those people, you can't just rule them with the iron fist. It's just not possible. And so what you find is the security glass have the same view about making a strong Russia, about their view about the world, about their view about even the countries that are their enemies. And that's what unites them and that's what keeps them strong.
So all these geopolitical constraints that you mentioned and the factors that we've discussed today, if we take those into account, where do you actually see Russia's future?
So looking forward, Youssef, I see Russia facing numerous problems. My personal view is, I think Russia's done well considering what happened with the collapse of the Soviet Union. However, I think they've gone as far as they really can. And the reason why I say that is because Russia is facing significant challenges that are going against it going forward. So the first of this is its population. Russia's population when the Soviet Union collapsed was about 150 million. Today is down to 140-ish million and it's declining. They're in population decline. The population that does exist suffers from numerous health issues due to the collapse of the Soviet Union and the problems they had. As their population declines, non-ethnic Russians will become a larger proportion of their population. And from amongst them, the largest already is Muslims. And under the Soviet Union and under Putin, he's had to use an iron fist really to maintain a grip of the Muslim population. Also, when your population is declining, the amount of people paying taxes will reduce. When your taxes reduce, the government budget will reduce. It leads to a spiral effect of numerous other problems. So Russia's demographics is going against it. The second problem is Russia has still failed after 30 years to diversify its economy. 30% of Russia's GDP relies on energy. 50% of the government budget relies on energy. And about 75 to 80% of Russia's exports are energy. Now, oil and gas, Russia doesn't determine the price of oil and gas. The oil and gas prices are determined by the international markets. So Russia is dependent upon a commodity where it can't even set the price. So when oil prices are high, as they were in 2005 to 2015, Russia did very well. The moment oil prices go down, the Russian economy suffers. And now that the West have put sanctions on Russia and they're forcing countries to not trade with Russia, you're going to have a big problem. The real issue you've got here is after numerous attempts, the government has failed to diversify the Russian economy. Under the Soviet Union, they used to rely about just under half of their revenue used to come from energy. Today, over half of Russia's government budget, it comes from oil and gas. So their heavy dependency on a single industry means most people are not involved in this industry in Russia. Most people don't even work in the oil and gas industries. As a result, they can't take part in the prosperity and the wealth of the country. Thirdly, even when we look at Russian energy, Russia's history of easily accessible energy is actually coming to an end. Most of Russia's energy we've seen for the last 100 years or so have been from oil wells and gas wells in easily accessible areas in the west of Russia. These oil wells and gas wells have gone past 50% usage. And what Russia is now going to have to do is get energy from hard accessible areas, which is going to be more costly. And these are areas where people don't even reside. So you're going to have to build new towns. You're going to have to move people there. And these are in some very inhospitable areas. These are areas where it's mostly frozen, which is going to be more costly to get the oil out. So Russia's dependency on energy is going to get even more problematic as it goes forward. The other problem going against Russia is the Arctic is now opening up because of the melting ice. Rather than going around Africa or going through the Mediterranean to get from one side of the world to the other on tankers, what you're going to find now is there's a whole new route open to the north of Russia. Now, Russia historically has always had to defend its land borders, so Eastern Europe, the Caucasus, Central Asia, and the Pacific. Russia will now have to defend the north of Russia, which is in the Arctic. You're going to have ships, you're going to have military ships that are going to be going through those areas. There are very few people that live in these areas. There are very few people for Russia who are prepared to even move there. And this is where a lot of Russia's future energy is going to be. So this is going to stretch Russia even more to find energy, which is going to be more expensive, and to try and run an economy which is dependent upon a couple of commodities. The other thing that we've also seen is Russia's military clearly hasn't modernized. We've seen the logistical problems in Ukraine. Despite all the talk of these wonder weapons Russia's producing, these hypersonic missiles, these drones, these intercontinental ballistic missiles, you find when it comes to bread and butter military, infantry with air support, logistics, occupying a territory and holding it, Russia is still stuck in the old Soviet doctrine. So this is going to cost money. This is going to take time. And it's money that Russia is going to see decline due to its dependency on energy and having a very narrow economy. And the final one, and this is probably the most problematic in my opinion, the Soviet Union, it had a vision for the world. It had a utopia, communism, and it propagated that. That was its foreign policy. And it tried to foment revolutions around the world. And there were many, many people it won across the world. Today's Russia has no ideology. It has no values. Russia is nationalistic. It's about Mother Russia. It's about the world respecting this. Russia actually has no values to offer to the world. It's not even proposing an alternative to the world order. It has no values to replace the global liberal system. So despite problems with Russia's hard power, when it comes to values and soft power and image, Russia has absolutely nothing. Nobody wants to become Russian. Look at the Ukrainians who for long were under the Soviet Union. They want to separate from Russia. They don't want to be any close to Russia. That's why Russia was forced to invade them. So I think Russia has done well, despite what happened at the collapse of the Soviet Union. But I think they've got numerous problems, and I think they've gone as far as they really can. I just see the problems growing and broadening in scope, which is going to pose even more problems to Russia's geopolitics.
Thank you for your time today, Adnan. It was a really interesting discussion. I hope the listeners enjoyed it as well. I'm looking forward to our future conversations about the geopolitics of other nations. I think that's something that the listeners need to look out for as well. If you want to learn more about Russia and the geopolitics of this region and other regions, you can check out our website for insights. We've got analysis and guidance, videos and reports on there as well. Thank you for listening.